Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Radio Z Hour, an interactive talk show celebrating the written word. Presented by the Zahme Publishing Press, www.zahme.com. That's ZHARMAE.com.
Hello, hello, everybody. It's your host, Alicia, here on this wonderful, well, rainy, where I am, Sunday afternoon / evening, where I am. And it's time for the written word, Radio Z. I am here in New Jersey. I went to the Book Expo America, the BEA, on Friday, and it was amazing. It was absolutely wonderful. I think that every author and everyone who loves books should go to these events here in New York. They are incredible. Today's topic is Gay Pride, because June is Gay Pride Month, and June is tomorrow. And we will be joined today by Rowena, a co-host, and Emma Jansen and Emmy Vaughn to talk about the topic, which is, gay pride. I am exhausted, so please don't expect much from me today. The bar needs to be set a little lower because this morning when I woke up, it was like 85. I got sunburns that turned my skin purple, literally, because I decided that this is the perfect weather to do a bus tour where I'm on a double-decker bus. And then I went in to get Chinese in the afternoon, and I was in there for like 30 minutes, and I came out, and it was like the biggest thunderstorm I'd ever been in. And I had no umbrella, and I was in a tank top, and then I had to walk for like 8 blocks in the pouring down rain. So now my hair is still drying, so I am exhausted, but this trip has been absolutely amazing.
Hello.
Rowena, are you here to save me?
Yes. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yep.
Hello?
I can hear you.
You
I think
can?
The real question is, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear everything you're saying.
Oh, okay. Well, I can hear everything you are saying as well.
I just didn't want to jump in and be super rude.
Oh, it's okay. I let you in. I have the master key over here, and I pressed the button to let you on.
Oh, yay. Okay. Awesome. Well, I'm super excited to be here.
Awesome. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. So, hello, I am Rowena Silver. I am the author of Chameleon Moon, and I feel like that is a super on-topic book to be discussing for Gay Pride Month. One thing that I would like to get into is that it's not just gay pride that is super important. It is also lesbian, bisexual, and transgender, and asexual people who are super important as well and deserve to see themselves represented, which is what I wanted to do with Chameleon Moon. And everyone is amazing and deserves to see themselves being amazing.
Do you have a second Skype open?
No.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you're still here. Maybe we shouldn't mess with it. I'm just letting you know it's the same number that you're calling from. It's to hear twice, which is weirding me out. I'm going to hang up on it. But I don't want to lose you. So if I lose you, then just call back.
Okay.
Am I dropping
in and out?
No. You just called me twice somehow.
Oh.
But you're good.
Okay.
I had two duplicate numbers on the thing. It was weird.
Okay, that is really weird. I'm sorry.
No, it's not your fault. Blame Skype.
Okay.
Oh, there you are again. Maybe that's not you. Maybe does Skype have the same number for everybody?
in mind. Maybe someone else is using Skype too.
Oh.
I don't really.
Okay, we're live on the air. Continue with your talking.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay, well, no, it's fine. Okay, so would you just like me to talk about my book, Chameleon Moon, or about myself?
Yes.
Or about...
Tell us all about your book.
Okay.
I'm sorry I didn't respond to that email earlier.
Oh, no, it's okay. Oh, no, it's something that it's a topic that is super important to me, both Chameleon Moon and queer rights and issues in general. It's something that, you know, once you get me started on, I will never shut up about, because it's obviously a very personal issue for me, since I am a queer person. And I wrote Chameleon Moon because I didn't grow up seeing anyone like me being represented.
It's a whole issue for me, since I am a queer person.
All right! Never mind. I hear what's going on. I was hearing myself. I'm sorry. I was logged into the radio thing, and I was hearing myself.
Oh, okay. I got really confused for a second there. I had no idea what's going on.
Neither did I. I was hearing
an echo. Our listeners were all confused. To all our listeners, I'm so sorry about today. I'm exhausted. Her Skype is weird. Skype is weird in general.
Yeah. My Skype is being incredibly bizarre. I'm so sorry about that. Anyway, I wrote Chameleon Moon because I grew up not seeing people like myself being represented in fiction, and I just really wanted to see characters like me doing amazing things. And because really, whenever you see queer people in fiction, they die. Or it's
really
super tragic. Huh?
I'm trying to think of any books besides the one that I wrote that has anything queer in it, and I'm not coming up with anything.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's
except
like,
in the House of Night series, there's a side
mm-hmm.
character that's very cliche.
Yeah, it's like they're either huge cliches or they die tragically. And usually both. There usually are huge cliches who die tragically. And it's like, that's not who we are. That's not who, I mean, and when you're a kid growing up like that, that's not who you want to see. It's like, wow, really? That's what the world thinks of you? It's like, imagine what that does to your little baby heart growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just really wanted to write a thing with a whole bunch of a lot of different kinds of queer and transgender people being amazing and being superheroes and saving the day and not dying and not being cliches.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, like, try to think of something that I could have used when I was a kid and what would have helped me.
Well, that's awesome. It's great motivation. I'm going to go ahead and let. I'm thinking that this other Skype person is Madeline, because she's from the UK. So that would make sense.
Cool.
Awesome. Hello?
Oh, yeah.
Hello.
I was right.
Hi.
Hello.
How's it going?
Hey. We had some Skype confusion earlier that was my fault. I really apologize for that.
Fine.
So I'm wondering, since your callback number from Skype is the same, I wonder what happens when you call the Skype number.
you get patched through to anybody, the White House, wherever, I guess. It's like
right?
The lottery.
That's just what I was thinking. Did you just randomly connect with somebody who's on Skype? That would be awesome. I would play that game all day. I would just call and see who I got.
Yeah. It's how lonely people connect. It's good.
Madeline,
just
introduce yourself.
Conversation. Oh, yeah. I'm Madeline Vaughan. I am an English writer. I was on the show last week, so if any one of you listened in that time, this is just going to be me repeating myself a great deal. I'm a fantasy writer, and my book, The Sons of Thespian, came out in March, and I'm
Hooray.
Currently working on its sequel. So, yeah. Hello!
Yay! That sounds amazing.
And also with the topic, I guess it's prudent for me to say I am a bisexual female.
Awesome!
And my main character, Rufus, is also bisexual, and I have basically tried to include as many different sexualities within the books so that it is basically accurate to what the rest of society really looks like. So this topic is very important to me, and I'm really pleased to be talking about it today.
That sounds amazing. And what did you say your book is called?
It's called The Sons of Thespian.
Nice. Like, cool. Because knowing that your main character is bisexual, honestly, it just became like 10 times more interesting to me, because maybe that makes me a bad person, but just queer representation is so important to me that just when queer characters are involved in positive ways, I have to read it. I must read it.
Yeah, you and me both. I mean, what you were saying about just the whole thing with stereotypes, and I just thought, oh God, yeah. And then you said about how the fact that it's like, yay, we've got a queer character, and then, oh, tragic death.
Yeah, they die. Later. Like, no.
Okay, so
let them live.
I wrote a paranormal romance novella, and I just realized this because you just said, you know, a tragic death, and the two main characters are lesbians, but one of them does die.
No!
But it's like, it could have been, it's not because they're gay, like, that was just because that just happened. I don't know, that was just a story.
Yeah.
But it
no,
wasn't
no,
like, I mean, one of them survives, so...
Okay, well,
hey,
of course. Well, hey, this is romance. Does one of them stick around as a ghost? Because she could, and then that would be pretty cool. Ghost girlfriend.
Well, no, I haven't written the second one yet, but I do have plans to resurrect her.
Awesome!
But spoilers. Not that anyone's read it, but you should read it. But just know that I wanted to write a story where that didn't have a happy ending. So I thought of the death part before I thought of the gay part.
Yeah.
I wasn't discriminating.
No. I mean, the thing is that it's okay to have a gay character or sort of someone with an alternative sexuality who dies, as long as it's not just, here, look, I've had this character just so that I can tick that box, and now that I've ticked that box, I'm going to remove them because they're in the way of my hetero-romantic story. Basically,
exactly.
And it's just a little bit, but why? But they had a purpose, but then most of the time they don't have a purpose because they are just there to tick a box. And that is so irritating.
Or it's did the gay character die so that the straight character can learn something about themselves? It's did they die to further the straight character's journey?
Yeah, it's the token, it's as people say, the token gay character who helps the main character level up and then and then promptly disappears from the plot. So well done to them.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, yeah.
It's that or they're the butt of the joke. It's that or, oh, the main character is suddenly being propositioned by someone of the same sex. It's a little bit awkward. We'll laugh about it.
Yeah.
And then we'll continue with the entire plot.
Yeah. Oh, if I had a dollar for every time I have seen that happen in fiction, I would have enough to buy the vacation that I desperately need after seeing it.
If you do, I don't know where you live, but if you go on vacation, don't come to New York unless you have enough money for cab fare, because apparently people over here just walk, and they never sit. There aren't even benches.
Oh, gosh.
Like, the bus terminal is huge, and there's not a single goddamn seat in the entire thing. And you've just walked, 10 blocks through the pouring rain, and all you want to do is sit down. And you walk inside, and there's no place to sit. It's pretty terrible.
See, this is why you need to go to a vacation to a place like France, which is just everywhere is a place to sit, because No one wants to move. They want to smoke and eat, and that's the extent of it. And I'm not being racist. I'm French. From a French perspective, all we want to do is sit and watch other people
that
and judge
awesome.
Them.
That sounds awesome. Next time I will do that. People watch
Definitely.
And eat. I can do that. So it's just like home, except in a cool place.
But yeah, it is an extremely important topic, and it is very irritating how little representation there is of gay characters and bisexual characters. And actually, something someone asked me, which I thought was a bit of a stupid question, was they said, "Why did you make him bi?" And I said, "Well, I made him bi because we exist and we're not sexual objects." This is very shocking, I know. And they said, "Oh, but he's so stereotypical. I mean, you see him having sex with women and men." I'm like, "Yes, yes, bisexual people do that.
Oh
that's
gosh.
It." But
those questions are so ridiculous. I mean, would they go up to a bisexual person in real life and go, "Why do you exist? Why are you bi?"
Well, no, I think they wouldn't, because they'd rather say that we don't exist, wouldn't they? They'd rather say, "No, you're confused, or you're in the closet, and you're not fully prepared to accept.
You're not gay enough, you're not straight enough." Oh, my gosh. Solidarity, fist bump. I'm giving you a fist bump through the screen.
Yeah. But the worst is when basically TV shows have a character who's been straight pretty much the entire TV show, and then they have like a half an episode fling with someone of the same same sex, and they go, "Look, they're bisexual, but it's not serious." And you're like, "Really? Did you just use that as a plot device? Did you just use somebody's sexuality as a plot device for half an episode? That's pathetic. Come on." So I have no patience. No patience for it.
and it just plays up the myth that bisexuals are by nature more promiscuous and more sexualized than any other orientation, and it's and that is such a damaging and false myth.
And the thing is that they say, "Oh, it's because people don't want to see gay characters." At which point you turn around and go, "Have you been on Tumblr? They watch is gay characters. Are you kidding?"
Yeah.
Right now, the entire world wants female superheroes and gay people.
And I just have to give a special little thank you to Tumblr, because without it, oh my gosh, Tumblr, that's where my fan base is. I love you, Tumblr. Hello, I love you. Chameleon Moon loves you.
I'm going to have to find you now. That's almost a threat.
I'm just the silver lining, just all one word, the silver, S-Y-L-V-E-R, lining. Please follow me. I can tell that we are going to be friends.
I have you.
Yay!
Done.
Yay!
Oh, there you go. You have a picture of the Eiffel Tower on there. So, prudent.
Cool. I don't even remember what I did today.
The silver lining,
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I found you.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is something important that I think actually writers are trying to address at the moment, and I think. That we have a responsibility as well to have that kind of representation in books, because it's there in real life. And you can't just say, "I've got six straight characters and I'm going to have a gay character pop in very, very briefly." Like, that's not realistic anymore. It just isn't. And also, when you do find characters like that in books, for instance, Trudy Canavan, I mentioned her the other week, she has a couple of gay characters in her stories, including one of the main characters, Daniel, is gay. And it was fantastic to read, because it was the first time I'd really seen a proper book with these kinds of characters in it, and it was handled very delicately, and I liked it very much. But there is a kind of focus which is that when you do see gay people in literature, it's often a gay male or it's a sexualized female. And there are, you very rarely see trans characters. You almost never see asexual characters. And bisexual people are objects of desire, or they're just not there. And that's, it's almost criminal. It really, really is. And you would think that at this time, you know, it's 2015, there would be more. And every time I see a book, every time I hear of a book like yours, I get very, very excited because I suddenly think, mm-hmm. yes, it's happening. There is movement in the water. We are coming to something new. And I just, it gives me hope.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. I feel exactly the same way. Oh, and by the way, I see exactly what you did on Tumblr. You just followed a blog that is not mine. Mine is Silver with a Y.
Oh, right.
Yeah. No, it's okay. I just, because I didn't remember posting the Eiffel Tower, so I just checked, and yeah, I see the blog, and I'm Silver with a Y. I post many more ridiculous things.
Oh, that makes more sense. Okay, now I found you, and now I followed you.
It's okay. Well, that's a really normal thing for me to have posted. I don't post many normal things. That's how I knew it wasn't me.
Well, I'm called Mana Pimp. Don't ask.
Cool.
It's awesome. A very long story. But
no,
I'm on there.
Oh, no, I understand nerdy in-jokes. Yay, I will follow you back. Yay, I got you.
So I feel like I have kind of like a weird viewpoint on the whole LGBT thing. I don't know. I guess my view is probably a little bit more controversial than your guys'. I mean, you guys are all about the pride thing and the movement and all that. And I find the movement to be a little bit, excluding. Like, I feel like they keep adding more letters and more letters and defining more people as different. And I have never thought that lesbians were different. I've never thought that who you have sex with make you anybody different, I guess. I've always just thought of people as people and didn't ever really care what they did in the bedroom. That's not my business or anybody else's business. And it's not, you know, a defining thing. I mean, it's like, you know, if I want to put mustard on my macaroni and cheese, which I do, that's something I do in my own private time. And I don't feel like that should make me like a mustard macaroni and cheese person. So if I want to eat something that's a little bit less, if I want to eat something else, we'll say, I don't think that's anybody's business either.
I mean, I've loved
both men and women, and I actually had a fling with a transgender in high school. So, I mean, I've been everywhere. And I've never thought of it as anything but just love. I guess I'm the whole love is love thing that happened a couple years ago. That's where I stand. But I don't believe that we should be defining everybody's sexuality to this incredibly unique, you know, like, there's so many new sexualities. There's actually a sexuality that's, according to my cousin, there's a sexuality that is creating new sexualities. Like, they have a sexual obsession with defining other people's sexualities. Like, there's an actual word for that.
I think that there's a lot of scope there, because on the one side, it is true that people are getting quite vigilant with it. They're getting very, very sort of, we need to be defined and you need to be defined. And if you don't fit in with this, then you must be that. And but I think on the other side of it, that a lot of people have come up through life seeing a very narrow idea of what it is to be normal. Mm-hmm. And suddenly they find comfort in having a label of their own. They find comfort knowing this, that they're not, what they feel is so normal, it has a name. and that there are other people
Absolutely.
Who have it as well. And I think, you know, I know somebody who has, when they introduce themselves, they say, hi, I'm a such and such and such and such, and they say 3 to 5 words at any given time, and it changes every week.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, well, at what point are you trying to help yourself and or jumping on the bandwagon a little bit? Are you trying to be a special snowflake, or are you actually do you actually care about this? Do you feel this? Do you actually genuinely feel oppressed, as you say, because you seem to be in a different oppressed group every time I meet you?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's not fair. You have these few individuals who take it way too far, and because of that, other people who are genuinely struggling with themselves, who genuinely need this in order to feel right and in order to understand themselves, are being trampled along with this whole, oh, well, it's not real, is it? You just want to make everyone feel different. It's a bit upsetting because, as you say, that there is an aspect of the gay pride movement which isn't very, very nice. And I know especially bisexual people can have all sorts of horrible stuff done to them during gay pride. And, you know, I'm speaking from a very narrow point of view here. But also people of color within those. I mean, there are still prejudices within a community which is trying to promote unity together. And,
mm-hmm.
and it's a very dangerous side about whether we are being too secular or whether we need to be in order to help as many people as we can. So it's difficult. It's very, very difficult, I think.
It's hard to find that balance, I think.
I think
that I have met a lot of people. I've met a lot of people who I think they declare their sexuality, like people that openly declare it, and I think that it's not, I've met quite a few people where it's not about them and their sexuality, it's more about them and their relationship with other people and how they want to be viewed, and it's kind of like they use it as a way to act out.
Yeah, it's the moment that your sexuality becomes a fashion accessory is when it becomes a little bit ridiculous.
Right? Or like a way to make yourself different, you know, like instead of, you know, I don't know, like wearing chains and spiking your hair to be different, you know, like it's a way to make yourself set apart. And I know a lot of people who did it like that, who, you know, it just really, I don't know, it really changed my viewpoint on it, because these were people that I really thought were into the whole, you know, movement and normalizing and equalizing the LGBT community, and then they end up, you know, they kind of spoiled it for me. So now I don't really even pay attention to it. I think people are people. I don't care what they do. I don't care what I do. If I am sexually attracted to a lamp, then I am, and I actually am not for that one, but it doesn't matter to me.
I guess I haven't come across a whole lot of what you guys are saying, and I know we're going to have very different experience, but I feel like a lot of what people tend to think of as over-categorization is a lot more with, it has a lot more to do with self-identification. And if you have, well, anyone who has had a cat knows that cats like to sit in boxes. If you try to put a cat in a box, the cat will not go in the box. But if you
set the
cat,
that's actually the most beautiful analogy I've ever heard.
Yeah, but if you put the cat next to the box, it will choose to go into the box. And people need, to an extent, you need labels, and you need to be able to take something and say, yes, this is me, this is what I am, I am not alone, and there is nothing wrong with me, and I have found who I am, and I have found people like me. And now that we have social media and the internet, there are so many people, and especially young people, especially young teenagers, who are finding these new things and who are experimenting and who are learning about themselves and finding that there is nothing wrong with them, that they are discovering themselves. And I feel like this experimentation with identity and with gender that people may not understand at first. I don't think that we should try to squelch that. I think that we should try to encourage that. And because if they are growing up in any way that I did, all they have seen are male and female, and all they have seen are these extremely rigid roles and these extremely rigid boxes with no kitties in them. And honestly, I may have a controversial opinion here, but I don't have a problem with gender accessorization per se.
I think it can be
a coping mechanism for if you grow up stifled and not able to be who you were.
I completely agree with you, and I'm sorry, I might have come off as a little bit too standoffish, but no, I do completely agree with you, and I also think that people do have a right to come up and say, actually, I don't define myself as this sexuality anymore, because people can experiment, and people can find that actually the more they look into it and the more they look into themselves, they may find that the label that they had, the box that they put themselves in, isn't right for them. Mm-hmm. And I think it is important to be able to feel free enough to find what is right for you. And to be proud of it and to own it. I just don't like it that there are people, maybe not many people, but there are people who use it as an excuse to make themselves feel marginalized so that they can be dramatic when they're not. And actually, because of them, there are genuinely people who are being marginalized, who do feel small, who don't know where they stand, who get overlooked because this one person selfishly wants to stand out and they want to go to say, no, you're only saying that to me because you're homophobic or whatever phobic. And because of that, everyone suddenly goes, oh, well, this whole movement is ridiculous. Did you hear so-and-so say that? And because of that, people who genuinely are normal and are trying to find their way are stamped on and ignored, and that's not fair.
Okay, I do hear what you're saying. I am sure that absolutely does happen. I've so much seen the opposite, but yeah, I absolutely do hear what you're saying.
Yeah, but I'm completely with you. I think it's very, very important that people should be allowed to do it, because for the millions of people that you know, that you've seen of that side, that's what they need, and it shouldn't be stopped just because a few people are coming out and being a bit stupid, basically. Mm-hmm. So I'm completely with you on this. I totally agree with you.
Oh, thank you.
So Emma has joined us, I think. Yeah, if you're actually there, Emma.
Hello there.
Oh, yes. I'm here.
Okay.
Hi.
Sorry you had
Hi.
To
Hi. I was concerned.
You go ahead and
I
do
thought,
a short introduction.
I am Emma Jansen. I am part of the GLBT community. My memoir is Unashamed, How the Closet Can Kiss My Ass, and I don't think
awesome.
I can be any more bold than that. I decided to throw that in everyone's faces, but the vulgarity of the book, it's much more heartfelt and sincere than the sum of its vulgar parts. So I encourage people to read it and determine for themselves, and I've been listening to some of the discussion about boxes, and I was getting a chuckle out of that.
Awesome. It's lovely to have you here.
I'm sorry. What was that again?
Oh, I just said awesome. It's lovely to have you here. I'm Rowanna,
thank you.
By the way. I'm Rowanna Silver, the author of Chameleon Moon.
Okay, I got to get the voices recognized because you all kind of sound the same a little bit, except for the accent.
Okay.
Just the accent. The one who sounds like she's sipping tea and eating crackers. is the English one, probably.
Biscuits.
Sorry.
I thought it was biscuits.
Sorry, you're quite right. It is biscuits. I did just come out of tea with the Queen, I have one of my corgis here, and my butler is bringing me tea. Totally is an accurate image of what's happening right now.
Oh, shame, shame. Is that a stereotype? Is that really what's going on?
I'm sitting in a squalid flat drinking Coke, so close enough.
You didn't have. You could have lied. We can't see you.
I could have maintained the illusion, but alas, it's not nearly as elegant. It's not.
So Emma, what do you think about the whole boxes thing? Maybe it's just my claustrophobia, but I don't like boxes. I don't like labels. I don't think that anybody needs them. I think that everybody should be able to do whatever they want, as long as they're not hurting anyone else.
Well, here's my take on boxes. Not giggling with the pun. Being serious about the subject. I have a preference. Well, I have a preference for butch women. And when I dress in a pair of jeans and a button-down shirt, I have short hair, okay? And even if I put on makeup, other women who are butch lesbians look at me and they see a soft butch or whatever label that they place on my appearance, and they won't talk to me prior to me being married, you know, when I would go to the club. So I would have to dress a little more feminine in order for me to attract the type of woman that I was interested in. So even though I'm still the same person before and after the outfit that I put on, they would already put me in a box. And I would have to kind of put myself in their box in order to get a phone number, to get talked to get a dance. It didn't matter. So I don't like them, but it does help at the same time.
But so what you just described happens to normal women, not normal women, sorry, oh my God, shoot me now. I mean, it happens to everybody, men and women.
That's true.
There's nothing to do with being gay. Trust me, there's plenty of women who need to dress sluttier to pick up men, and plenty of men that need to buy nice jeans to pick up women.
Well, you know, I guess in that sense it's boxes for everybody, isn't it? It's just all of the boxes.
Okay, we should just burn all the boxes.
So it's sad. We don't like them, but we definitely play into them.
My dream for the future is that eventually there won't be any boxes. People will just be people.
I don't think so. I think it's comforting. I think sometimes labels are a little comforting, and we like the category. We just like it. That's just the way things are. Instead of tissues, we like Kleenex or Plus or whatever the names of tissues are. You know, I say tissues. Could you hand me a tissue, please? And somebody will say, what? A Kleenex? Well, whatever brand you have, I didn't say that, but, you know.
If you have grown up different and you have not known why and you have had everyone mad at you and you've had all the adults in your life mad at you and looking at you like you have been doing something wrong or you've just been existing and they've been looking at you like you've been doing something wrong and you don't know why and no one will really tell you why and you know that there is something different about you but no one will really tell you why. And then you meet all these other people, and they're all different in the same way, and you discover that, oh, there's a word for that. And it's not really that there's something bad about that. It's just a word. Wouldn't you be glad to know that there is a word for
There is definitely comfort to be earned from having a word for something. It makes it seem more tangible. It makes it seem realer. And as you say, it allows you to then connect with other people. I mean, it's like trying to Google search something when you don't know how to define it. And
there's
suddenly, the moment you have that.
And comfort.
And you know what? My issue might be that I was just raised in Seattle in the 90s, and everybody, like, it was so normal. Like, I never had anybody, or I never thought it was different because I was attracted to both genders. I never, ever, even, like, that never even happened. I mean, it happened, like, when my mom read my MySpace page, she kind of had to sit down and talk to me and try to convince me that I wasn't, like, I guess bisexual, because I was like 13 and I didn't know any different. I just said bisexual, and but like other than that, like 5 minutes in my life, I never felt any different at all, because all of my friends and most of, I mean, just, I don't know, just Seattle, we're all liberal over there.
Yeah. Then I guess. what you have to realize is that not everyone is going to have grown up having that that really lucky, wonderful, I'm so glad you had that experience. I am really so glad that you had that. And a lot of people don't have that. And those are the people who are going to find comfort in names for who they are. And that's the people I think
of. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, no, it's okay. I was pretty much done.
Discovery of a category for me was actually mentioned in my book Unashamed when I was at a club and I was attracted to a girl and I pointed her out to a stranger and she told me, oh, so you're a chubby chaser. And I said, what?
Oh,
because she was a thicker girl. She had curves, you know. She wasn't your typical size girl that everybody would assume that I should be attracted to. And I
No. Okay.
Like, what is that? And she explained it to me, and I was starting to take ownership of that label, and I got made fun of for it and everything else. And once I finally took ownership of that label, I was very proud of it. And, you know, it kind of helped me be the best possible wingman I could possibly be. Not a whole lot of people liked, you know, thicker girls. So I was awesome.
I always feel like maybe the whole it's very different in America than it is in England, I guess, possibly a little bit. I think we come from it at quite different angles. I don't know why. Sorry, just the way you were talking about it, and maybe it's because I don't really know the same kinds of scenes. I do agree with you that actually the whole thing about you found that label and then you owned that label and you kind of got a certain power from it. I think that's something quite universal to some people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would wear a shirt now with Chubby Chaser on the front of it. Doesn't bother me now. But 10 years ago, I wouldn't.
Yeah. I think that there is one problem, which is that people, for instance, when I mentioned to somebody that I was bi, they turned around and they said, well, you can't be because you really like guys. And I went, yes, that is accurate. I have a boyfriend. I do indeed like men. And they went, and I've only ever seen you with a guy. And I'm like, well, yes, because you've only ever seen me with my boyfriend. And they're like, so, and I, you're always looking at guys. And I'm like, yes, I do that as well. I also like girls. And they're like, no, because you like guys. I'm like, you really don't seem to be understanding. And they're like, if you're a bisexual, you should like them both equally. And I thought, well, no, actually, most bisexuals find that within their bisexuality, it's not necessarily 50-50. Some bisexuals are like, I like these 9 guys and this 1 girl. Mm-hmm. And other bisexuals are like, I like sort of 4 out of every 10 girls and 6 out of every 10 guys. And I think that what happens is that you say, I'm bisexual, and this immediate image of you kissing a guy 1 minute and then leaning over to kiss his girlfriend the next and destroy their marriage or their relationship sort of springs to mind. And the whole threesome thing is extremely disturbing, because suddenly the moment you're a bisexual, you're easy and up for anything because you're a total sexual deviant.
Bisexuality and polyamory are not the same thing. And polyamory is an entirely separate issue, and it's also wonderful. Hey, I also do have polyamorous people in my books. They're also great.
Yeah,
while we're on, while
and,
we're on.
That's great. If you are bisexual and you are that as well, then you have the best time. I really hope you're happy, and that, you know, I'm totally cool with that. But
you do not represent
the entire bisexual community.
Nobody does.
No. Well, at the same time, you know, those people need to do some Kinsey research, you know, to figure out the scale and where they belong on the bisexual scale and whether they would act it out with the same sex, whether they wouldn't, you know, or even the people that don't understand bisexuality need to understand that sometimes you're with a partner just because you love that partner and you're still bisexual. You just happen to be with whomever you're with at the time. It doesn't change your sexuality.
Yeah, it's like if it's raining, the sun doesn't disappear.
Yeah. Oh no,
true.
Clouds just gone forever.
By the way, I did lead a polyamorous life for a period of time, which is also covered in the book. And let me tell you, that's not an easy life. I don't know why people think that's all sex, because it's certainly not. It's certainly not. And we could have an entire podcast on polyamory in itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because the triads and the geometry, oh my God.
Oh my gosh, yeah. That's the real love triangles.
You've got couples that have been together for over 20 years, you know, and it's got multiple people involved for whatever reason, and they do not sleep with each other necessarily. You know, one person may only sleep with one and whatever. I don't know. It just depends on the unit. They call them units.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get me started on that, really, because I would take a whole podcast on that. There's another idea for Alicia.
Okay, because I forgot to mention it before, bisexual people can absolutely be attracted to more genders than just men and women. Non-binary people exist. Whoa!
This is true. I guess some people prefer to call that pansexuality, but bisexuality, yeah, it's completely as you say.
Yeah. Absolutely. Non-binary people who do not get recognized at all nearly enough in anything ever.
I feel like we've been neglecting talking about transsexuals at this point in time, because I think all our talk about fluidity and whatnot, it doesn't include transsexual people, because that is very much more of a physical thing, pretty much from birth. I believe I'm right in saying.
I was saying that, it can be totally, it can be from birth, although I have known a whole lot of transgender people who have discovered this about themselves a lot later in life. But yes,
it's not quite, it is separate from sexuality, because a trans person can have pretty much any sexuality at all. Being a transsexual isn't a sexuality onto itself. It's a gender issue. And I think because of the fact that it is part of the LGBT community, a lot of people don't consider that. And so when it is written in books, it becomes more of a sexuality, or it becomes a stereotype for the very few times that it's ever done. And I think actually the worst part is that a lot of the time when a transsexual character appears in the media, they tend to be exposed in a horrible way. It goes, this person is actually a female. And they're like, well, no, they're not. Why would you do that? Why would you broadcast that to all of the transsexual people in the world and say that this is an acceptable mode of outing them? That's not right.
It's awful.
It is totally awful. And most of the time, also, they are depicted as victims, which is cruel because
either
not be defined in that way.
Or villain. It's like in the 80s and 90s in movies, we had this really awful trend of villain transgender characters. I mean, like, the one that comes to mind first is Buffalo Bill in Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
Holy crap. But, yeah. Just, my gosh. I feel like there's this really weird over... It's, like, truly bizarre over-sexualization of trans characters and of trans people in general. How it's, like, cisgender people are people who are not trans. They seem to think that, like, what's in your pants is automatically their business. And so it's like, they go up to trans people and they will literally ask, well, what were you born with? And it's just like, would you ask any quote unquote normal person this question? Why would you ask them that? Are you serious right now? And it's just, it's a truly bizarre thing, and it's bad.
I think
the media currently has been inundated with the Bruce Jenner story, and the overstimulation of his story has personally affected me because I do have trans people in my personal life, and... my plans were to do a serious story of, you know, a trans character in future books, but now I'm concerned with what has happened with his story and how people are just so disinterested in what's going on with that and the negative responses that have come out of his story that, you know, I need to take a step back and say, well, you know, even though the story is serious and it's important, they don't want to hear it right now. And
well,
so
I
even if I were to write something serious at this point, you know, would they pick it up? I don't think they would right now.
Actually, can I say something here? I think the most important distinction is we don't necessarily want to hear coming out dramas. Writing trans characters is incredibly important, and I think that if you wrote a transgender character, they would be incredibly welcomed the way that mine have been, and we would love them. We would absolutely love them. It would be wonderful. We just don't want more dramatic coming-out dramas with more tragedy and more just we have seen this over and over again with the coming out and the being dragged through the media and all of this. We're done with that because we're more than that. Our stories are more than that. And to, like, have a transgender superhero, have a transgender detective, have a transgender pro wrestler, it's like, do any kind of story with trans characters. Do anything you want. Just no
basically
more coming out
making,
and dying.
Yeah, but making transgender characters just the victim of the story.
Yeah.
Why not have a character who is this and just happens to be transgender? That would just be epic. And actually, in my second book, the one I'm writing at the moment, which is the sequel of The Sons of Thespian, it's called The Children of the Delphi, one of the characters is a transsexual, and he reveals it toward the end of the second book, and the book is set in a Renaissance kind of setting, and it's an alternative universe. It's drawn very much from Celtic mythology and the Arthurian legends. And
ooh,
something that readers said was basically, and also about the fact that I had gay couples who were married in the book, they said, well, is this historically accurate? And I thought, it's not just because the gay movement has happened now that suddenly there are transsexual people and there are gay people. We haven't popped out of the ground.
No,
we've been there. Throughout history, and throughout history, there are accounts and there are records of people like this. And it's absolutely right that even in this kind of setting, especially in this kind of setting, that we address what would their lives be like before there were hormones, before where it would be even harder And actually, even better yet, is to have a character who goes through that and is still not the victim of that, of a victim because of that.
Yeah.
They are their own character, and I've come across approval with that, and I'm pleased, and because of that I wanted to develop it. And originally, actually, the character wasn't transsexual. The character, when I first wrote them, was a girl disguising herself as a boy. However, as I wrote this character, I realized, no, they are a boy. They are absolutely a boy. The fact of what they may have been born as, of how they may have been perceived when they were born, is irrelevant. I know this character is a boy. And I suddenly thought, this is a transsexual character in a very difficult environment, and that's wonderful and should definitely be included. And I'm not going to change the plot so that that's more convenient for, basically. And
that
I want to see more of that.
Absolutely. Wow. Does that make sense?
So much passion in this subject, Jesus.
Well, does what we're saying make sense to you?
Oh, yes. Yes, it does.
Okay. I mean, is that helpful?
Oh, yes, yes. It was just
okay.
A good throw out there for a topic of conversation, see how you guys feel about it. I've asked a couple of friends, and they feel the same way.
Sure, because, I mean, my gosh, yes, we need more transgender characters, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, I know that our topic is gay pride, but like, it's absolutely transgender pride and bisexual and asexual, and like, just our community is so varied and beautiful, really. And I think that what I was talking about before everybody joined is that I grew up really not seeing anybody like me represented in fiction. And now that we are, hey, we're authors, we have published books, yay! Like, we kind of have a responsibility to give people representation that we wanted to see and would have helped us as kids, and shine lights on our beautiful, amazing, very diverse communities. And just show how beautiful we are.
You know how in the military right now, and the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and DOMA being removed and changed and everything, we're one step forward and possibly two steps back. It depends on who you ask. But the new community, the younger soldiers coming in, are learning about GLB. The GLB community, because trans people are not authorized, not allowed to be in the service at this time.
Yes.
And so when they are learning about the gay community, they are learning about GLB. So they don't even know, you know, the young 18-year-old soldiers coming in, they don't even know the full acronym or what it means. So when they say the GLB community, they think that they are talking from knowledge that they've learned through the service, and it's incorrect, and it bothers me. I correct them and tell them why the T is not added. We don't talk about it in the service, but it does kind of bother me, and we're almost developing a whole, you know, nation of new people, young people, who are missing that portion of the world, and they're missing that portion of knowledge.
And trans people are, and especially trans women are, and have been so important to the queer and trans community, and to Pride specifically, because I know that when we think about gay pride, we think about, you know, the marches and the floats and the dancing and the music. And well, what those parades commemorate are Stonewall, the Stonewall riots in Greenwich, New York, 1969. And the people who spearheaded those demonstrations were largely transgender women. Sylvia Riviera and Marsha P. Johnson. I think that it's incredibly important that we remember them, and so often we do not.
Yeah.
And we forget them a lot. Trans women are, we would not have Pride without them. Sylvia Riviera and Marsha P. Johnson.
Yeah.
And, so well, I'm going to have to Google them, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. And they are. They're removed from history because they don't fit into the box that we want, basically, to summarize the LGBT community as. Like, the T is almost knocked off the edge of the word, even though actually it owes, the whole movement owes itself to that, and that's so important. Thank you for mentioning that. I'm also Googling the names now. Thank you.
They were, yeah, it's true. They were erased, and we need to not erase them.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry. This has been a really, really amazing talk, though. And I'm sorry if I got a little dramatic right there. It's just a super important part, and just it's just that pride comes from a place of, you know, knowing that just that we're remembering them and movement, and just that we are allowed to exist and be ourselves, because, you know, back in 1969, like, it was illegal, really, being queer, and especially being transgender was illegal. Impersonating, I'm saying that with heavy air quotes that you can't see, it was illegal, and the police would raid, and, like, I mean, and that was the start of getting terrible laws like that repealed. And even if we don't have complete, outright laws like that anymore, it's still so important to be able to show people, and especially young people, that they are not alone, and that, you know, there's nothing wrong with them, that they have a place, that they can be safe. And sometimes books can be safe places. And I want my books to be safe places for people who need them.
Yeah. I also think that your books will help encourage people to realize that they can be the hero of their own story without being a straight, white male. Normally, the hero of the story is a straight, white male with black hair, or a bright blonde and bonny. And then occasionally you'll have, like, a skinny sort of geeky girl is the main character instead. And you're like, but what about any person of color? What about anyone with any disability? What about anyone who is, and the psychic may be the quirky, we have our African-American psychic, or we have our gay psychic. And you're like, but why aren't they the hero of the story? Why did you feel that the hero could only be this one very narrow, fill this one very narrow category? And I think that your book especially will mean that someone will pick that up and go, hey, I can be the hero too.
Oh, thank you. And so will yours. I promise I'm going to read the Harmatia cycle. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, Harmatia cycle, that's right.
Absolutely. The Sons of Vestian. I'm scrolling through your blog right now. I'm just reading. But yes, I'm actually reading that. So yeah. Very important, very good.
I have, while you're Googling and, you know, doing all that stuff, I have an excerpt of Unashamed that I'd like to bring up, because it does cover a couple of things that we've already discussed. It's only two paragraphs, so I'm not going to go into it, but if you don't mind.
Sure. Oh, please, yeah.
It's chapter 3. And it begins, it was difficult holding back my sexuality after coming to realize who I was. It's like trying to announce the cure for cancer in a whisper. Typically, when gay people come out of the closet, they become flamboyant with their new discovered or accepted identity. Some own all of the rainbow trinkets and make it obvious that they fought to be themselves. It's a rite of passage in the community. My inner confidence was gained by owning the title of true bisexual. I used the word true to establish credibility for the label. It sets apart the stereotypical girls in college who finger their best friends on a drunken, horny rampage from the bisexual girls who struggle early on. Inner confidence, however, did not earn me sexual freedom. Inhibiting myself was essential to entering the realm of don't ask, don't tell, so I could be all I could be. Definitely some irony to be noted there.
Wow. That's extremely powerful and very provocative. I like it.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for sharing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of hit a couple of things that we've already discussed. And I was like, wow, that's shit.
It's
I know I'm not supposed to cuss on this podcast, but holy moly.
I think it
you know,
also
and then,
actually...
then you were also talking about, you know, minorities basically as being the main characters. And I wish that you and I could just have a private conversation because I have said this for many moons now that I intentionally, with my fiction novels, I intentionally make my characters the minority. I don't choose to make the main characters the white guy with dark hair, with muscles and lean, and, you know, I don't do that. You know, my main characters are curvy women, Italian.
Yes.
The main character in Discovering Sanity is Mexican. He's got dimples, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The other characters are black, Japanese. I go all over the place. You know, the narcoleptic hooker, she's got narcolepsy. You're talking about disabilities. I'm all over the map.
I love that, by the way. I read that and I absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I try to dabble in everything that people don't like to talk about. I push the taboos. I say, here, oh, you don't want to talk about that? All right, I got your button.
Yes. Yeah, and you make it work really, really well. I love people who own their writing.
Hmm. The conversation, sorry to interrupt. It brings to mind, I'm not as brave as you, because when I started writing The Sons of Thespian, I was 17. I was just coming out as a bisexual myself. I was finally becoming comfortable with it, having sort of lived with it for about 5 years, knowing what I was and not really knowing how to express that. And a lot of my main characters were white because they had this Irish or very British sort of background because it was Arthurian legend and Celtic legend. But gender and gender roles and sexualities was something that I did express. And recently in an interview by J.A. Ironside, who is another of the Zame authors, she asked the question, she said, you seem to flip gender roles and traditional hero types. And she wanted to know why I did it. And I basically said, I'll just read my response because it's just quicker. I said, this is an interesting question, and it makes me think of something else I once got asked about whether I write male or female characters better.
Mm-hmm.
I used to prefer writing men because I was somewhat of a tomboy. As I grew up, however, I realized that just because I enjoyed combative sports and climbing trees didn't make me any less of a girl, and that being a girl didn't make a character any less exciting.
Mm-hmm.
There's this idea that roles in fiction have to be segregated by gender. And when I set out to write The Sons of Thespian, hereby sot, I wanted to erase that. A person's gender isn't a characteristic, and it makes me angry that we've adopted archetypes based on sex and sexuality and physicality that we then pass off as three-dimensional characters. As such, in Sot, Yonatan, the main character, one of the main characters, got the role of the feisty but flighty but courageous royal. Faye was the secretive silent warrior, and the hero, Rufus, is a scrawny, bookish nerd suffering from depression, and he's the bisexual. And each of them have their own personal strengths and weaknesses, and all of them possess both a traditionally masculine and feminine side, like any balanced person does. And I don't want a child of mine to grow up believing that they can't be the hero of their own story because they're not a boy or straight or strong. These are merely qualities. They are not a whole person. And that's what I wanted to show in Sot. And I really, really wish that when I started writing it and I made these characters, I was brave enough to also include other aspects as well because I explore gender and sexuality and mental health issues. But there isn't that much, there are a few people of color, in the book. Not nearly as many as there really should have been. And there are no disabilities and there isn't enough yet. And even though occasionally people say, wow, you're so diverse, And I think, no, I'm not. I should be more diverse. I should be more diverse.
It's amazing that you recognize that, though, and you can do so much better now.
Yeah, and I hope that in future that it's something that I do improve upon, especially when I write projects which are set in London, for instance. I read a lot of books which are set in London, and all the characters are white, and I'm like, have you been to London? I imagine it's very much the same in New York. It's like London is like 20% white and 80% everything else in the entire world. There are barely any white Caucasian people in England left, and that's fantastic. Okay, we are an extreme minority. Why do we dominate the media? Why are there Caucasians everywhere? Why is that the norm when there are barely any of us left? You know, it's just not right.
No. Hey guys, actually,
well, your response deserves a standing ovation.
Oh no, I just love that. I love that answer so much. I want to marry it. I want to take that answer on a romantic cruise. No, seriously, I entirely agree. Really, I'm just very happy. And also, hearing that amazing excerpt from Unashamed made me realize how much I would also like to share an excerpt from Camellia Moon, if that's all right, because it looks like we're awesome, because it seems like we're getting a little bit close to the end of our show, and I would like to sort of end on a very uplifting note, and I do that in my book. I end on the most positive note ever. I'm speaking directly to my reading audience through Radio Angel, who sort of serves as the narrator / Greek chorus of the entire thing, Observer. And so this is what she is saying on the radio to everyone who is listening. And it should sound pretty familiar. They're going to hate us and say terrible things. You're going to hear that you were born wrong, or you made the wrong choice, or that you're sick and disgusting and evil and need to be wiped off the face of the earth. But listen to me. You're beautiful. I really mean that. I mean it from the bottom of my squishy, fuzzy heart. Every single one of you listening to this is beautiful and worth it, and you need to survive. We need you to survive. People will try to hurt you. People will try to shut you up and bring you down and even kill you, because people throw rocks at things that shine. They'll use guns and they'll use words, and the worst part of all is that you might listen when they say that you're a freak or a monster, and you might start to believe it. But they are lying. Don't believe them for a minute. Just keep singing. Sing for the ones you love. Sing for the people who are fighting and for everybody who didn't make it. Maybe even sing a little bit for me, but mostly sing for you. And they can't silence us. Listen to my voice and use your own, and never, ever stop. Your voice is your power, and nothing and nobody can take it away from you. Love yourself. Love the people around you and never give up. If you need help, reach out. If you're drowning, make some noise. There are people who love you who will throw you a life preserver. That's what it all comes down to, love. That's how we're going to get through this. And we are going to get through this. Thank you.
That's, wow.
Thanks.
I'm doing a hit app at the you know, the cafe, you know, where they snap your fingers. That's what I'm doing right now.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I mean, like, in a nutshell, that's what Camellia Moon is. That's what it's about. It's trying to help people survive, really. I needed something to help me survive, so I wrote something to help other people survive.
I'm really, really blown away by this. There's tears in my eyes.
Oh, thank you so much.
I wish that I'd had that growing up. I mean, I had a lot of support growing up, but I think even for me, that would have been very moving to have had, very assuring, and I think you're going to help a lot of people with that final excerpt.
That's why I did it. Thank you. Oh, I'm going to cry too. Thank you.
This this has turned into a group therapy session.
Yeah. So that was cool.
Wiping eyes furiously.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, so does anybody else have anything else they want to share or say? And I hope Alicia's still here.
I am.
All right.
Hi, Alicia.
You okay?
Yeah. I'm just only half here.
Okay, yeah. How are you doing? I know you're pretty tired today.
I'm more tired than I've ever been in my entire life.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, okay,
anything
we can...
short time. No, I'm actually really, really enjoying listening to you guys. You guys make a great show.
Oh, yay! I'm
moving
really
and entertaining. I couldn't possibly add to it. You guys are perfect the way you are.
Yay!
Just
yeah.
To say, you guys are awesome.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, this was pretty amazing, yeah.
I think we did good.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So, anyone else, anyone have some closing remarks?
Well, you all should, one last time, share your social media and your websites and such. Invite listeners to follow you. I'm sure a lot of people, you know, who would listen to this would probably want to follow you guys just because, you know, you're the right kind of people to talk to about certain things.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, I am Roanna Silver on Twitter. It's R-O-A-N-N-A-S-Y-L-V-E-R. On Twitter, and also Chameleon Moon, and I am easy to find on Facebook. Yeah. So that's me.
Totally stalking you. Totally stalking you.
I don't know. Tumblr blog is a little, that's my silly, geeky place. So.
Okay, well, I'm Madeline Vaughan, or M.E. Vaughan. You can find my author website at www.madelinevaughan.com, and that's spelled MadelineVaughan.com. And through that, you can find my book website, which is www.hamashiacycle.com. You can also find links to my Twitter and my Facebook page. My Tumblr, I have a couple of them because I'm greedy like that. My official author Tumblr is emmyvaughan.tumblr.com. And if you want to find my silly, Marvel-filled trash blog, it's manapimp.tumblr.com. And that's manapimp.tumblr.com. And I apologize for anything that you may find on there.
P-I-M-P.
It's an extremely long story.
I am Emma Jansen. I am author of Unashamed, a memoir of how the closet can kiss my ass, Narcoleptic Hooker, and the newly published Discovering Sanity. You can find me on www.emmajansen.com. Spelled EMMAJANSON. And on there, you can find a contacts page, which will give you my email and Twitter and Facebook page. And I do check them all, and I will respond personally.
All right.
Awesome, guys. Well, thanks for a great show.
Thanks for having us.
Sorry, you guys have to do all the work.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Alicia. And thank you guys. This was a wonderful time.
Nice to meet you all.
Yeah.
Nice to meet you too.
You guys. Bye bye. Thank you.
Bye
bye. Bye.
Bye. Alrighty, folks. thank you all for listening on this rainy Sunday afternoon where I am. If you would like to check us out on Facebook, or you can also communicate with me directly, ask questions about the show. The Facebook page is facebook.com/TZPPRadioZ. And go ahead and tune in next week, same time, same place. I hope to see you then. All right. Bye.